You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, my name is David Bryan, and this is Curiosity Invited, a podcast inspired by endless curiosity. Tune in for an open-minded conversation about interesting and important things. Hello, welcome to Curiosity Invited. I'm David Bryan, and today I'll be having a conversation with someone I know from my past. Her name is Hillary Brasseth. She, after college from, where she graduated from Marquette with a degree in economics and political science, she went on, she joined the Peace Corps and was in, I believe it was Guinea for a couple of years, and, then went on to be a fellow at the Harvard, Kennedy School, and has since become the executive director of Open Secrets. We'll be talking about the work that Open Secrets does. Open Secrets is the collects and has a searchable database, largest in existence, I believe, of political money, money into politics, money into lobbying, money from all sorts of sources. Some explicit and some dark money that is difficult to trace, but they do it. And super important information. You rarely see their, you know, their name out there as the breaking, as those that break a story, but you frequently see the consequences, the results of the information they collect in stories that are revealed by large media outlets, small media outlets, etc. Fascinating information, fascinating work, and it was a fascinating conversation with Hillary Brasseth. I hope you enjoy it. Welcome to Curiosity Invited, and my name is David Bryan, and I am with Hillary Brasseth. And Hillary is the executive director of OpenSecrets.org. Open Secrets, we'll talk. You'll find out what that's about in a moment. But hello, Hillary. Thank you for doing this. And good to see you. Oh, Truth in Advertising. I should tell people that we know each other from a place that we both were involved with years ago. But she's gone on to do wonderful things ever since then. And so, Hillary, thank you again. And Brasseth. And so, Open Secrets. What is Open Secrets, and why does it? Oh no! Before we do that, could you give a little, you know, a brief bio of who you are, how you got there, and just that.
Yeah. Great to see you, David. And
you too.
Thanks for hosting me. A brief bio, I would say the arc of my career has spanned both the private and public sectors. I got my start actually as a Peace Corps volunteer more than a decade plus ago in a little country in West Africa called Guinea. And I arrived in Guinea the same year that it became a democracy. And so there were a handful of forces that were shaping my very early questions around this notion of democracy. What is this system? What is it supposed to do? What does it aspire to do? And it also made me reflect a lot on the version of democracy we have in our country. And I had really big questions that shaped the arc of my career. After Peace Corps, I went into the private sector. I worked with a handful of design and innovation consultancies, mostly in the capacity of product development. So I would sit pretty squarely between design and engineering and business needs to discern for an organization what they might need to build for the group of people that they're trying to serve. So that function has sort of guided me in and out of different places and spaces. I spent time working with a startup trying to build the next generation of voting technology. and then went back to academia for about a year. I was a fellow at the Kennedy School. And during that time, realized that I wanted to go back into the public sector, hearkening back to my time as a Peace Corps volunteer. And so I'd known about the work of Open Secrets for a while, and here we are now. Open Secrets has also a very storied history. We've been around for about 40 years, and our earliest roots date back to two senators, one Republican, one Democrat, who were setting out to generate more transparency in government. I think they saw a growing trend of money influencing politics or being involved in politics, and they felt like it was their duty to try to make that be more transparent and accessible to the public in order to expose potential conflicts of interest or what have you. And so the mission of the organization is to follow the money, we like to say, in politics. And so we have this really vast database of 400 million data points spanning, you know, several decades across the federal and state levels, where you can go on our website and find out pretty much anything you want to know about the role of money in the political system, from lobbying to campaign contributions to trying to understand what the brands you buy your clothes from are doing on Capitol Hill. And so you could get lost in the different data sets for a long time and also try to track the trend of what's been happening with the role of money over the last several decades.
And is the assumption, and forgive me if these are naive questions, but is the assumption of Open Secrets that if money is entering the system, it is there to influence policy in a certain way, or is it simply about being transparent so that people who use the site and learn this information can make their own decision about whether that's a good thing, a bad thing, or nothing at all, right?
Totally. I would say it's more the latter. We are agnostic about the value of whether it's good or bad money being in the political system. Generally speaking, as an organization, what we are strong and firm on is if we are going to have money in the system, everyone deserves to know about that. And they deserve to know who is putting the money in the system so that we don't have undue influence by any interest more so than another. Because at the heart of democracy, right, is the notion of one person, one vote, and this notion that we all get to have a say. And so if it turns out that a certain moneyed interest is indeed resulting in some form of corruption or too much influence on a certain political outcome, that's not even something that necessarily we would do the work around, but would partner or share that data in a way that the other systems of accountability, like journalism, investigative newsrooms, would be able to use the data to be able to tell that story. Mm-hmm. And so as an organization, we're agnostic on the nominal, good or bad question, but very firm on the fact that the transparency is essential to mm-hmm. democracy. It's essential to build trust in our systems and so on.
And can I ask you don't have to answer this, but or if you know, don't answer it if you have to kill me after you give me the answer, but do you personally or the people in the organization that you know of have a working assumption that more money, more not necessarily more, not even necessarily more influence, but more access. Well, after a certain point, right? If I give $100 and if I give $200, that's not going to double my access. But if I give $2 million, then if I pick up the phone, chances are the person at the other end will respond because I'm the person who just gave $2 million, right? Wish that were true, but you know.
Yeah.
So is that an assumption that sort of circulates in the organization?
I would say, and that's not necessarily a normative judgment. It's actually probably just a reality that you often would see if somebody has deep pockets and is willing to give to a candidate, the likelihood of being able to get on that candidate's agenda as an issue or a person is much right. higher.
Right.
It's the nature of the way the system works, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And, yeah.
Yeah.
So
and really, you know, something that we've noticed with the data is sometimes it's not that money happens and then access is granted, or money happens and then certain policy gets passed. Sometimes it's the other way around, where there's a policy idea that's floated or regulation for a certain industry that's discussed. And then you see the spike in the data of money then going in, because an industry, of course, has it in their interest to shape whatever regulation might be happening, or, you know, restrictions on the ability to grow as an industry often result in greater lobbying done on behalf of organizations.
And you say, so historically, this sort of grew out of the two U.S. senators who, I'm sure they experienced firsthand the drudgery of dialing for dollars, and saw ways that money, they were suspicious about money coming in chunks from different places. So it's been on people's mind for a long time, but I'm assuming, tell me if I'm wrong, that the amplitude got turned up significantly after Citizens United, right?
Yeah.
So could you talk a little bit? I mean, I know that's not your field, but could you talk a little bit about how things have changed since then?
Yeah, it's really drastic, actually, when you look at our data, because again, we've tracked it over the last several decades since essentially 2010 Citizens United, which is one of two major court cases that kind of shaped what happened subsequently, is another district court case called Speech Now versus FEC, which essentially, you know, deemed money as free speech. And then Citizens United as a court case, Supreme Court case, came in and essentially allowed the creation of what's called an independent, I'm going to get a little bit jargony, called an independent expenditure committee, which essentially is very commonly, colloquially referred to as a super PAC. So when you hear about election funding, spending, you often hear this term super PAC, which is basically a version of an independent expenditure committee. So the designation for a super PAC or an IEC is a 501c3 organization. And all 501c3 organizations that give politically are required to disclose their donors, right?
Right.
If money's free speech, we have to know the interlocutor.
Right.
Awesome. This
sure.
Super PAC gave all this money. Here are their donors. Fine and good. What became a loophole is that super PACs could also receive money from a 501c4, which does not have to disclose its donors. And so essentially what you see is this trend of super PACs disclosing their donors. And when you look at the list of those donors, some of them are these C4 groups, which could just be a shell company that somebody set up yesterday in Delaware. And you don't know any information about that company or that organization. And they donated millions of dollars to this super PAC, which then gave to a candidate on behalf of that shell company.
And the super PAC doesn't have to report. Well, it does have to report it, you
exactly.
know, shell company X, but they don't have to report.
Exactly. And so that then became this phenomenon that's kind of been coined over the last several years as dark money, essentially money whose origins we don't quite know.
And
of course, the rationale for that might be varied. It could be that somebody doesn't want to be exposed as giving all this money. You know, it runs the gamut, but it begs a pretty philosophical question of, you know, is this okay? That if you look at the trend of dark money over the last decade plus, that percentage of the overall giving continues to increase.
Right.
Where we don't know the origin, essentially, of those funds.
So was that trick in the Supreme Court case, or was that a trick that clever lawyers, because lawyers are clever, came up with after the case?
Such a good question. I'm not a lawyer by background. I don't quite know, but my assumption is that it's the latter.
that
reading the fine print of the judgment, there was kind of this loophole, like, oh, well, what if we set up a shell company? Then, you know, the donors disclose, but the original donors are not. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So interesting. I will say there's a handful of states, because of course, often in this republic, you have innovative policy happening at the state level. So there are a handful of states that are trying to sort of hit at this from a different angle. Arizona recently passed a ballot measure that requires any advertisement aired on television that might be funded by a super PAC that they have to list their top three donors, like the original donors. And
how do they find, how could they do that if they don't, if the C4 doesn't have to report its donors to anyone?
Yeah.
They're trying to make the C4, how do you get access to that
information? Essentially, they're trying to, you know, you still could run into the issue of seeing a C4 listed as the top three or whatever and not knowing the original source of those funds. But what's interesting is that it's bringing that feedback stream much more immediately to voters' eyes, where a voter could see, oh, you know, Americans for America PAC is funded by these three things. Two of them are individuals. One of them is this like random organization that we don't know. So it kind of leaves the voter in a place to say, this is shady, or I know two of these people. I wonder what their interests are. One of these things is opaque. That's kind of, you know, fishy. So they can at least have more context, more background on the advertisements that are being aired in their communities to know who's funding this, what's their interest, et cetera.
And because of your work with, or because of the work of Open Secrets and your work with Open Secrets, so you just mentioned a little while ago, you know, working with journalists or other organizations to get that information. And would you say that there is a broad enthusiasm for the idea of transparency among, you know, folks on any side of this, of the political spectrum? Forget the people who are running and raising the money, but people.
Yeah.
On, you know, Republicans, Democrats, whatever. Yeah, transparency is good.
I would say, generally speaking, yes. In the sense that we have both sides of the aisle who like to use our data, whether it's because there's, you know, reporting that could be done on both sides of the aisle, sure. But also, even both sides of the aisle from a political operative standpoint, I know use our data for their own work, whether it's fundraising, whether it's lobbying.
Yeah.
And so I think there's this sort of closeted support of transparency in practice. And then I think that there's like in parallel and perhaps a bit more on the surface, this bigger debate around does transparency matter? Or does it make trust worse? Like, is the fact that Open Secrets shares all this data helping with trust, or is it actually confirming the public's assumptions that everything's corrupt and it's terrible and, you know, solidifying in their minds that our institutions have all these backdoor deals happening?
Who's having that debate?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, I joined this organization in January, and I joined at a time where, as an organization, I've been having to wrap my arms around how do we sustain ourselves? So a big part of my job, of course, is fundraising and making sure that we can sustain ourselves. And this is actually a conversation that I would hear on occasion from funders who would say, we've funded money and politics work for the last decade or transparency work, and democracy has gotten worse and trust in institutions has gotten worse. So there's this sort of false correlation, I would say, and false causational link drawn between more transparency equals less trust. I actually argue the contrary. I think we have to have transparency in order for trust to be built. And the reason I say that is because, agnostic of what political side of the aisle you're on, what we see with our data and with our website is when an event in the world happens, people come to our site to find primary source information themselves. In the last year, we had 11 million unique visitors to the site looking up various aspects of our website and platform and data. I would go on there because we catalog trending searches every 24 hours. And so anytime a world event would happen, I would just get curious and check, right? Almost unflinchingly, after any major world event, or specifically in the US, we would see in trending searches like the top three or four of those trends related to that world event. So for example, attempted assassination of Donald Trump, part one. That following day, I went on our trending searches and the attempted assassin's name was part of like the top five trending searches. United Healthcare CEO. In the wake of that happening, United Health or some derivation of United Health or Brian Thompson was in the top five trending searches. So to me, that's a big indicator that people want to gather the information directly from a primary source themselves to piece together what's happening on their own.
Searches for what? I'm confused. So the data that you have, that people can search on your website, doesn't all have to do with donations?
It has to do with donations or lobbying activity or somebody having been a lobbyist. So for example, why somebody might be interested in looking at our data for something like I just cited is like in the case of the attempted assassin, somebody would probably want to know if this person was politically motivated. And one way to find that out as a proxy is have they donated politically historically. And our database has that history. Similarly, maybe they wanted to learn more about the rifle club that person used to practice at. Have they given politically? What are their potential ties? And in the case, of course, with United Healthcare, people probably want to understand what's their lobbying history, who have they worked with politically, or you know, who have they lobbied historically?
Your database must be enormous.
Yeah, it's
and your bill for your bill for cloud storage must be crazy.
You get it. It's astronomical. God. I mean, for a nonprofit, it's rough. But yeah, it's a vast database.
It's a vast
database. Anyone out there from AWS is listening. We're very open to free credits.
Well, so does anybody else have this data?
It's a great question. I mean, yes and no. Yes, in the sense that the federal donation history that we hold comes directly from the FEC. Now, because we've been doing this work for decades, we actually have data that the FEC no longer has, because every so often, I think it's every 6 years, they delete historical data.
Because who wants to pay that storage fee?
Yeah. I mean, so we're kind of a library or an archive in that way, right?
You are.
And similarly, lobbying data is available, but it's clunky and hard to get or hard to use. And so the work that we do on that data is also helpful because it makes it more usable to the end person who wants to work with that. Similarly, our foreign lobbying database for what's happening, you know, with other countries in the US. So we add value to these data sets and also make them more usable. And that's really the unique function of Open Secrets, is we're really the only entity that has this data that so many people rely on, whether it's journalism, advocacy.
I was going to say, is there sort of, does it cluster? So people rely on this data. It's an enormous amount of data you've got. I forget how many unique visitors you said there were last year, last whatever.
11 million.
So does it cluster? Like, you know, half of them are journalists and 20% of them are whatever, lobbyists, whatever. So, yeah. I mean, is there a pattern?
It's a good question. It's, you know, it's hard for us to drill down to the actual profession of those visitors. But what I can say is that the traffic is certainly concentrated. The number one area of our site that's visited is an area called donor lookup. Basically, it's the ability to look up a name and see the giving history of that person. And that could be anybody who wants to better understand what their neighbor has done to, you know, doing actual political work and wanting to know the history of,
you know. You can go on there and find out what you gave, what I gave, what.
Yeah, I should have looked you up prior to this podcast, David.
Well, I may not have given through myself. I may have given through a C4.
Fair point.
Which I have some contact with, but not for that reason, it turns out. So, yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. So, is it valuable? Like, do you, it valuable? And how do you measure success?
It's a great question that even as an organization, we've been talking about internally for the last year, because while we know that so many use our data, rely on our data, from journalists to academics who are trying to study the history of this stuff. Gosh.
Yeah, yeah.
To just your average person, right, who wants to stay informed. Data itself is not necessarily sexy. And so the story we tell about our impact has been a hard nut to crack, because we could talk all day about all these people came to our site and used the data, but at the end of the day, what they do with the data is the thing that's sexy or interesting. And so historically, this organization's had a pattern of other entities using our data, getting the grant for it or getting the funding for it. But really, without us and the data, it would make their work nearly impossible. So, you know, it's an ongoing conversation of like, what actually is our impact? Because it's hard for us to quantify, oh, we made trust higher, or, oh, we made, you know, voter turnout higher because people felt engaged.
Well, what
we
about
can't actually prove that, right?
Right, right. But what about things like, nobody says thank you, but, you know, organization or journalist, team of journalists from ProPublica, you know, use stuff, do a deep dive into stuff and write something, and suddenly something is revealed. Do you have any of those? I don't
know. Oh yeah. Yes, definitely. We have a whole section of our site that has news coverage. I think from last year, our estimated potential reach from citations from other media outlets, et cetera. And just the algorithm has an ability to quantify how many eyeballs did those pieces reach. Our potential reach is in the billions, just like Open Secrets data alone. And so whether that's a deep dive piece from ProPublica, actually we had Washington Post do a deep dive on some of our lobbying data this past year. We had Wall Street Journal use our data to do a piece about how expensive the US elections are relative to every other country and why that's the case. So we often partner and get inbound inquiries from media outlets in the hundreds every month who, you know, either want data or want comment or want a clarification for a number on our site or want a bespoke data set that we have to send them, for example.
It seems to me at least that counts as success.
I would say so too. Yeah.
Because yeah. I mean, because especially if the organization is agnostic in terms of, you know, who wins and who loses, people might have their personal preference, but if as an organization that doesn't matter, then the use of it by other organizations that use it to reveal something.
Yeah.
It doesn't even have to be bad. It could be great.
Yeah. The biggest proxy that was unexpected that I experienced from the last year is I'll be at a conference or at a dinner in DC and I mention that I'm with Open Secrets, and the amount of overwhelming appreciation, support, kind of almost like fanship that I experience from people. Oh, I use your site all the time. Oh, we love Open Secrets. I'm at so-and-so media outlet, or I'm at so-and-so political operative, and we use your data all the time to do opposition research. Or most interestingly, I once was at a gathering and a lawyer told me that she used our data on like a high profile court case to be able to expose some corruption from an official within the government. So, you know, there's countless anecdotal examples I'll get when I'm out.
Which... You know, I get it. I get that it's not measurable in the way we like to measure things, but it's certainly real. I mean, there's value, obviously. I'm curious also about, I guess I'm going to ask a question that the sort of data. So, okay. So in the last year, 2 years, you know, it was revealed that a couple of, maybe more than a couple of Supreme Court justices received gifts, trips, whatever, right, from, and would that be information that somebody who was searching could find gifts from X person to, or no, that's a kind of data that would not enter the archives.
Yeah. You know, that one's tricky. I don't think we actually have data on Supreme Court justices. That's a different filing process. And then also some gifts are like under the radar and right. don't end up getting reported. So we right. wouldn't necessarily have those in our database.
Right. I get it.
Yeah.
So it's not that. So can you, and you know, I know this could get crazy geeky, but so let's not get crazy geeky, but could you talk a little bit about how open secrets, don't give away any trade secrets, although in the interest of transparency, everybody should have it, but how open secrets digs into information such that you can say, one can say, oh, wait a minute, this money that seems to have been dark seems to have been given by XYZ. How does that happen?
Yeah, so with the dark money research, we have a couple of experts in-house who will do what we sometimes refer to as shoe leather research. So imagine when you shine a leather shoe, it's a constant and tedious process to get through the layers, right? So some processes they might deploy is trying to understand where is this C4 registered? Do they have any other information out there on a website? Do they have tax filing documents? Or is there something in a 990 that we could dig up that leads to another clue? Like, it's a very arduous kind of rabbit hole process.
This is really like going through the page after page. This is not data that an algorithm can.
It's deeply investigative. Yes.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And you did mention algorithms before. So, for what? What is it? What does it scrape for? What does this what do various algorithms reveal in terms of? I don't mean the particular things, but what do they look for? What does it sort for?
You mean within Open Secrets or
within Open Secrets? If you're using, if some of the research is having a formula comb through data in databases, what does it search for? Or is each search something that gets set up separately?
Right now, it's a bit more of the latter. For example, we have every month leading up to the election, there's a new set of contributions in the contributions data set that we'll download and integrate with our site, right? So in that process, there might be an instance where we notice an outlier data point. Oh, this is a really big donation from a person that historically has not really given much politically. Maybe we should look into that a little further. So there's some, anecdotally, some instances that will kind of flag by virtue of so many people on the team having been doing this work for so long that they have the institutional memory and awareness to say, this is unusual. We should look into this more fully, right? I think as we continue to evolve and as an organization, and we're, of course, like many organizations, in the midst of a very intensive data integration project where we're merging two really big data sets and migrating to cloud services, we'll be able to hopefully deploy a lot more technical infrastructure that will hopefully be able to bubble up other patterns or anomalies that we might have missed because the database is so vast, right? And so for now, it's like our team tends to look for sort of the typical corners of when you do the next download, what's the spread of the donations that we're seeing from where? And of course, all of this data feeds our website, which we already have a bunch of algorithms or queries preset. Like you can see the number of millionaires who donated in this last election. And you can compare that to how many millionaires donated 20 years ago. And that number has, of course, skyrocketed. The number of people giving $1 million plus donations has widely increased, vastly increased. And so every download, all of those tables, all of those charts on our site update with the latest numbers. Right. And so anybody, again, this is not necessarily just our team, but anybody in the public could happen to be looking at a page when the update runs, and they could be the first ones to spot the anomaly or the big story that they want to break. And that's in some ways always been a little bit of the, I like to call it the healthy tension of us being what we like to call a journalism adjacent organization, where we have all the data. In theory, we could be producing and cranking out all these interesting stories about the trends. And, you know, we do have our own sort of journalism arm. It's very small, yet mighty. But at the same time, we don't have the capacity to compete, if you will, with the ProPublicas of the world or the New York Times. And so it is in our interest, of course, to make sure that we're able to provide this data to these journalism organizations that just have so much more firepower than we do, and to do what we are at our core meant to do, which is to furnish the data, make sure it's accurate, make sure it's timely, and then partner deeply where we can to make sure that they can create the stories.
Is there a policy where the partnership goes in one direction? Like, you know, is it okay for somebody from Open Secrets to notice something and call, hey, ProPublica, this is what we just saw. You might want, maybe you're interested, maybe you're not. Or is that not what happens?
Usually if we notice something and we have capacity, we'll write about it. And then that ends up getting picked up by the other entities that, again, just have a much bigger reach, much more firepower than we do to, like, do that work potentially even deeper, right?
You'll write about it where?
On our website.
On your website. It goes
up. Yeah, we have a news section.
Got it. Okay.
And those news stories end up going out in our newsletter.
Yes. Right. Which I signed up for, by the way. Yeah.
Yeah. Now I'm going to get you to donate next.
Of course.
Watch out. Which
I did earlier.
You did. Okay.
Yeah. No, don't worry about it. Don't get excited. are there things that Open Secrets is, you know, thinking about doing that it has not yet done that people who follow this? You run into those people. I don't think I've met a single person who knows what Open Secrets is, other than you. I don't travel in those circles, actually. But
it's quite a niche.
Yeah, yeah. But are there things that Open Secrets is planning to do that are sort of interesting and exciting at your from your point of view?
Definitely, we are, as we speak, in the midst of building out a membership version of our data that allows people access to greater tooling to manipulate or export bespoke data sets. And so this is something that we're really excited about because I think it'll help create the organization to be a bit more sustainable from a funding perspective, but it will also enable us the chance to build tooling I think we've always for a long time wanted to build and have not had the capacity to do so. So that is hoping will launch sometime in Q1, just an initial beta rollout. And then, of course, once we have that, we'd love to build and expand upon it and, you know, integrate, of course, the latest and greatest Gen AI conversational frameworks where you could go in there, blank slate and type, show me every single donor who's environmentally minded, who's given to a Republican candidate. Right. And then it would spit that out or show a visualization or what have you. So that we're really excited about. The other body of work that I think we all would love to restart, we used to do very robust calculations of net worth of members of Congress and also in the government. So essentially, the argument is that, oh, I elected this person to Congress and suddenly they've gotten very wealthy, right? So we've looked at, you know, we'll download the stock trades. Every member of Congress, for example, has to file when they trade stocks. We haven't had capacity because we're so nimble and lean. We haven't had capacity to update that data since the last few years. And so we're hoping to be able to do updates to that as well.
Yeah, that, but that's, well, but that's going to be of interest to a lot of people. Does Open Secrets have, does Open Secrets have enemies? Are there people who just wish this would go away?
Oh yeah. I've been in conversations with actually a political donor who asked if I could remove his name from the website, which we can't do, but because, you know, his name is also on the FEC. So yeah, we definitely have people who are like, this is inconvenient.
This is really inconvenient for me. Yeah.
Yeah. At the same time, I would say, generally speaking, both sides of the aisle use our data. And so there's kind of the love hate, probably sentiment, like, yeah, it's not fun to be, you know, have exposure on my stuff, but it's also very useful to be able to see on,
yeah,
on opposite their stuff. Sides.
Right. And somebody else's stuff. That's interesting. And has there been any conversation within the organization about relevant to Open Secrets about what might unfold with a new administration coming into Washington?
I would say yes. For example, anytime there's a new administration in town, we will take a look at the appointments. And so we've done a few deep dives on our site of folks that have been appointed and what their histories are. Some of them are lobbyists. And so we've taken a look at that. And then in April, there will be a filing of all of the donors to the inaugural committee. So already there's been news about, you know, Meta donated millions of dollars, et cetera.
Yeah.
That's just anecdotal. We'll actually see the full report of that when the file hits in April. And we'll probably do a deep dive on trying to understand those patterns. And I think in general, we're also keeping an eye on the lobbying activity that's potentially going to unfold with, for example, conversation around regulating big food or big ag, you know, with RFK in HHS, what might we see from pharma, which historically is always the top heavy hitter in the lobbying space.
Yeah,
there's going to be for sure probably some unprecedented stuff that unfolds and other things that we'll have to do some digging to make sense of for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I think it's spectacular, really, and important. Even without the assumption that all money or even all big money is a bad thing or is pushing in a direction that is ungenerous and self-serving and all of that. Even without that assumption, I think it's just the transparency piece. Like, let me make the decision on my own if I'm comfortable with person X giving $200 million to whatever, right? I think you've landed in a really important place.
And
and we can cut this out, but and the job may be a wonderful one or a terrible one, and that's independent of that. But in terms of the importance of the work, I just think the anecdotal impact, the significance of the anecdotal impact in addition to various news sources on both sides, using the data that they can't readily access otherwise.
Yeah.
So I think that's super important, especially, and more and more. and more since Citizens United and all that. So if we stopped right this second, what would you like smack your head about in 10 minutes? Oh my God, we should have talked about blah, 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 blah. So, you know, what would you be upset about if we didn't speak about?
I think the only other aspect to this that I'm trying really hard to communicate around is like government is not an every 2 year or every 4 year thing. Government is a 24/7, 365 activity. And there's nowhere that's more evident of that than our website, because you can see lobbying happens every day. You can see that campaign contributions are happening even in off cycles.
Right.
And there's also really interesting things happening at the state level as that kind of becomes the next frontier of political operations. And so the thing I try to encourage people to think about and to like get interested in is, you know, what might be happening with the company that you're buying your clothes from or your food from, and who are they giving their money to, or even the company that you work for. So that's the last bit, is that this isn't just about elections. It's a constant process where there's ways to influence even in the quiet times.
Yeah, that's, I think that's important to say. It's you know, there's that assumption. People say things like, well, I'm not really into politics, or, oh, I am really into politics. But that really means most of the time, when elections come around, I participate in some way. But politics happens continuously.
Yeah.
And, there's no down day. Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah. You know, it's too bad capacity is limited by funds, but given the skills and the expertise that Open Secret has, the people, it's a shame that there's no way to expand the news search function on the website, both for people's use and as a potential revenue stream for Open Secrets, right? I mean, it's so.
Yeah.
And as a,
we're working on it.
Yeah, good. I'm glad.
Yeah.
Well, I trust you. So I'm glad you're doing that. So, hey, thank you. What a delight. And
thank you. You know, great chatting.
Always good chatting with you.
Yeah, likewise.
So thank you for spending the time, and thank you for sort of revealing something about that. And I probably will smack my head and say, oh God, we should have talked about, but then now that I know you again, who knows? There could be a next.
There could be.
You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.